Hello.
Can you see me?
Yes, we can.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Can you see most?
I'm going to get resituated real quick.
Alrighty. Looks like you're still at you're at your house, or are you still at the workshop?
I'm at the workshop, but it's after hours, so it'll be noisy.
Champagne, you open the doors with sleight of hand, but I was never yours. I see it through the magic and the views getting clearer. Smile realistic through the smoke and the mirrors. My eyes love what my brand new jacks. Never gonna fall for your special effects. It's magic.
Welcome to another episode of Comic Pop Visits, brought to you by Comic Pop Library. I'm Richard, along with
Jonathan,
Lenny,
April,
and Logan.
And in today's episode, we have the distinct pleasure of visiting with Kevin Ward. He's associated with the Heart and Fire Film Productions, a special effects makeup artist with them. He was a season 9 contestant of Face Off on the Sci-Fi Channel, as well as working with a 13-floor haunted house. And Kevin, first off, let us tell you, you have a big fan in the room. So you're going to have one person that's really goes fanboy on you, probably.
Well, I'm honored to hear that. Thank you.
That would be me. I've followed Face Off from the beginning to season 10 to right now. First of all, since we're getting so close to this season finale of this season, have you seen any of it?
Yeah, I'm current with it. Yeah, I've watched it the whole way through.
All right. Who do you think is going to win?
I honestly think Rob is going to. He's been very strong the whole way through.
That's what my opinion was, too. And it kind of seems to me it's kind of like the judges are not too strict, but they're kind of strict. How does that work when you guys are doing that?
You know what? With my experience, I notice what they don't let slide is deviating from the challenge criteria.
Right.
If they tell you something that you specifically need to do and you don't do it, they're very hard on you. For example, I was in bottom challenge 1, actually, when we had to do an alien based off of a museum artifact, and I found a clamshell and fell in love with them. Like, I gotta use this because this is gonna be so cool. And Omar and I drafted a design that got away from us a little bit, and there's a lot of components we had to sacrifice, and then when we presented on stage, they said, your clam inspiration looks way too clam. Neville said, I told you not to do that. I said, take an artifact, be inspired, and turn it into something different. So I felt like we missed the mark a little bit. We let the because you know what it was? I think we went too literal. So that's one thing you got to make sure not to do. And also, it's weird because you really got to pay attention to what the parameters are, because sometimes, you know, your imagination, gets you kind of down the wrong path sometimes because you get so excited and you just want to put this design out there. But you have to check yourself. Okay, does this meet the criteria or does it not? And into challenge 2, I was really fearful for my safety because I was just on bottom look for an aquatic creature. The next challenge was sirens, and I got this textile cone snail. And I almost made the same mistake. If you notice in that episode, I was sculpting a big shell that the snail would come out of. And, you know, Meg and I were back and forth on it, and we agreed, I'm going too literal all over again. I'm not supposed to make a snail. I'm supposed to make something snail-inspired. And so I think it was a good experience because we were the winning look that week. So it was nice to go from chopping block to winner. And I think it's because I heeded that advice. And I think what I've noticed on the show this season is the judges still, they maintain that. It's like, do what we tell you.
Right.
Because
I haven't actually...
Sure, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I haven't seen Face Off in years. I didn't have cable for a long time, so I didn't even get a chance to watch you on Face Off. But I did get a chance today to look at the Siren. And I was going to say, that was rad. And so several of your other designs, even ones that you were kind of, I don't know what the judging parameters were or would care. I'm the world's worst judge at everything. But I thought they were really cool looking, amazing. And I really like that Siren. I'm not surprised it won.
Well, good. Thank you.
With Face Off, we see that you guys are in so much pressure to be hurrying through all these projects. Is that what happens in your actual studio, or do you have a little bit more time to actually do a little bit more finessing with your projects?
You know, I've never been under a deadline that's so intense as Face Off. Every time I take on a personal project here in Denver for a client, for the haunted house, for myself, you name it, I've never given myself a 3-day time period where it has to be done. I would never do that. If I had a client tell me, here's my idea, this is what I want, deliver in 3 days, I would say, well, that's crazy. I can't do that. There's no way. You've got to give me more time.
And that's exactly what Face Off wants, is right. to put you under that kind of pressure.
Yeah, that's what's hard about it, but this is what I'll say about Face Off that makes the experience a little easier, is that when you're on Face Off, your whole life revolves around just that. You're not distracted with having to work your 9-to-5 and then get to do your creative project. You don't have the issue of having to stop what you're doing to make a Home Depot trip, to make a trip to the art store. On Face Off, everything is in the lab. So food's taken care of. You got all the products you can ever want, and you're just there to just focus. So that's the benefit to Face Off, and I think that's why we can get things done in a 3-day time period. Even though it is high stress, it's high anxiety, there aren't the same levels of distractions that there are when I'm back home. When you're back home, you're distracted with work, you're distracted with family, your relationships, all kinds of other things. So, you know, there's pros and cons to both, I think.
So did you prefer being in Denver and being able to kind of take those breaks and kind of recharge your juices for the creativity? Or did you prefer the constant pressure of creation?
Balls to the wall.
Yeah.
You know, I actually don't mind pressure, because I think I work really well under it. And I think the reason why is because I've taken on a lot of work that puts me up against hard deadlines. I've done a lot of projects that are out of town, and so you have no choice. I mean, you're there for an allotted amount of time, and then when your plane leaves, it leaves. So it's like you have a task, you have to get it done. I've done work for a lot of indie films, and it's the same principle where, like, there is a shoot date. And if you don't deliver by then, it ruins everything for everyone. You have to reshoot. So that's another case where, like, you don't have a choice. Like, the day it has to be done is the day it has to be done. And even so, let's say I have a month or 2 weeks, often I will find that I am still working up to the final minutes, because, you know, sometimes having extra time, it's a little bit of a curse. You get a little too comfortable and think, I got 2 months. But then that turns into 1 month. You think, well, 1 month, that's still plenty of time. But then 1 month is 2 weeks. Think, 2 weeks, I can do it if I put my mind to it. But then that 2 weeks is 1 week. And so...
Sounds like you're procrastinating.
Yeah, and I typically don't. I'm usually, you know, on the ball with things. But when you have a really fast deadline, you really get it in gear. And you knock it out. And that's what Face Off is like. So I think working... And it's the same with the haunted house. You know, we open when we open. Right. You can't be fooling around, taking your personal time. It's like, hey, when the show's open, it's open. Get that makeup done or get that set done, whatever the case is. But I do, I might have gotten away from you a little bit. I do like doing the work I do in Denver, where I can kind of budget time for myself a little bit. On Face Off, there's no time negotiation. You do what they tell you.
They're like the Nazis of the art world. It's great.
Yeah, I will agree with that.
So is it pretty much an alumni now that you keep in touch with all your, you know, your co-contestants and everything? Or
Yeah, I know Evan Hedges personally. He actually works in this very shop.
Yeah, that was kind of surprising.
His table is right there. You can't see it, but just take my word for it. And my table is right there. So, him and I work together.
Contestants. The face-off never ends.
I met Evan, I'm going to say like 4 years ago when I started working here. And we always talked about that show called Face Off. He would say, "You ever thought about going on there?" I'd say, "Yeah, I have. I applied for season 3. I might try again. What about you? Have you thought about it?" I said, "Yeah, I thought about it. I don't know if I'll ever do it." And we just independently decided to each audition for season 9. I didn't know he was doing it. He didn't know I was doing it until we came to the shop the same day. And we're working on our demo for – yeah, we're working on our demo.
B-reel for the show or whatever?
What do you call it? Our audition video. Okay. And we were very it was cool getting to go on there with someone I know personally. But to answer your question, since then, yeah, I consider myself friends with everyone there. We were like love season 9. There was very minimal drama. We really, you know, got along pretty well for the most part.
That's good.
As best as you can expect.
What'd your boss think when 2 of you left? Or are you self-employed?
Oh, he pimped us out all over the place. As soon as we
he loved
back.
It. I'm telling you, if 2 of his employees and he does special effects and 2 of his employees are on Face Off at the same time, he was loving that. He was telling everybody, it was on every window, everybody met in the street. Did you know 2 of my employees are on Face Off right now? You can watch it on, what is it on? Sci-fi. Blah, 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 whatever time.
Yeah. But you do mention that you've been working there for 4 or 5 years or so. So did you work independently before that, or do you work independently now, or how did that come about?
I've been trying to stay busy with freelance work ever since I graduated college. That was back in 2009. But I've always had employers, and I've had – there's another effects company I work for, LaFond Effects. They do a lot of set designs and theming. So they've been off and on. I've maintained employment with them. The 13th floor is a little more steady because we're busy year-round with production.
Really?
But I've always...
I didn't know a haunted house would be that busy, but it is that busy?
I've always tried to take as much freelance work as possible. And I can show you what I'm working on right now, actually.
Oh. Cool.
Wow, cool.
Sorry. Hopefully...
Sorry, listeners, we get to see.
I don't know how well you guys can see this. Can you guys see this all right?
Yeah.
Not now, Logan.
Okay, I live in Denver, all right.
I get it.
That was about saying.
Oh, that's cool.
I'm working on a
it's Oscar's cousin.
He's a big nug of marijuana, yeah. And he's going to be featured downtown.
I love the eyes.
So cool. That's cute.
So, I love the eyes.
he'll have better eyes than that, actually. These are placeholders.
Okay.
But, yeah, he'll have friendly blue eyes.
Well, he looks spaced out as
like,
hell, so it's kind of working for you.
That's so cool.
He's like friendly Disney weed, you know? He's not evil.
You do want a kind of Disney eyes, so everyone just accepts it.
That, like, indie film that was like, it's that big bong, you remember? Yeah, it's like the bong or something.
Yeah.
It's the best.
The killer bong or...
No, it was a horror show.
I think it's a killer bong, isn't it?
It might be. I don't know.
You guys watched that without me because I have no idea what you're talking about.
What's some of your new stuff that you're going on? I know we've talked about the Face Off quite a bit, but I want to get into some of your newer stuff with Heart and Fire Film Production.
Yeah, of course.
We actually have seen some of the things that you've done. I personally, and I think a couple of other people, Conflicted, the short film that you did there.
Mm-hmm.
I think Lenny did it best when he described it. You know, it starts out so subtle, then it just kind of goes wrong real at the end, you know, and it was like cool, you know, but we enjoyed that one.
And it was a big surprise because the makeup just, it goes from just, you know, pretty normal.
Yeah. So what was makeup your design process for that? Was you the whole makeup into the special effects?
Yeah, I did do the makeup. It's not my writing. So I didn't come up with the concept, but I was called upon to do the makeup, and my directive was to kind of go Tim Burton with the makeup. So we did that.
That worked.
And then with the ending where the heart's...
Oh no! Come on, not
gone. But it's called Evil Bong. That's the silver lining.
Oh, Evil Bong.
Skype does not give
now
you.
Now we can find it. And
we have
it
no
again.
Connection to Skype.
There's at
Skype
least
does not give you second chances.
There's
once
at least
you lose it.
3 movies.
Look, it's the desert calling Kevin Ward. Yeah. Out here in the hills, we'd like to talk to people, but they don't let us.
All right, you guys there?
Yeah, yes, we are. We're back.
Okay. Yeah, sorry that happened. I'll just try to go the whole way, so hopefully that doesn't keep happening. But to get back on point, that broken glass look, it's kind of a favorite of mine. Working in the haunted house, I just like to experiment on people's faces because I've got all these canvases in line waiting to get makeup done, so sometimes I just play around. And yeah, the broken face thing is just something I've tried on a few people, and then for this particular film, it was appropriate to do that, so... Yeah, at the end, I drew broken lines all over our actor, Spencer. Made him look like a busted piece of work.
So do you feel more connection with the sculpting aspect of your job or with the makeup and aesthetic part?
Sculpting.
Okay.
Sculpting. I think sculpting is what kind of turned me into a makeup artist because I'm into, like, character design. I'm into creature design. And so you can be a sculptor without having to be a makeup artist because it's common for people to just sculpt, like, masks, or it's common for people to sculpt a character that's just like a display bust. But if you want to see that character come to life, then you have to create something that's wearable. That's a step above a mask, so mm-hmm. you'll have to create something that's applied, so a prosthetic. And anyways, that is what I think made me kind of delve into the makeup
part of it.
It's just that that drive to just be a character designer.
So have you always been drawn to sculpting and the art?
Yeah, well, I've been drawing since diapers, I think. sculpting, I guess I've always sculpted in a rudimentary sense. I mean, I remember getting like a kit of Play-Doh when I was a child and making whatever I could to the best of my ability. When I got into junior high school, I took sculpting classes.
So did you know for sure going in, graduating and going into college that you wanted to be a makeup artist and everything? Or were you still a little...
I'm going to say effects artist. Okay. Because if you're an effects artist, that's a very broad topic with a lot of sub departments. So as an effects artist, I am a set designer. That's mostly where I get my employment, is to actually like build the sets, insulate it with foam, carve it out, theme it, do whatever. I do a lot of fabrication. I make a lot of props. So I didn't go to school to become a makeup artist. I went to school because I wanted to be an effects artist. And again, that encompasses many different aspects of it, because, excuse me, I also did theater in high school. So I thought, you know, this is fun. Maybe I can try to take this passion, integrate it into movies. But when I went to college, I went to the Art Institute. It wasn't I went for industrial design, which was more like commercial art. It was very product design based. But I used that education to kind of make me better at what I do now, because I think now I'm really good at conceptualizing. I am good at prototyping, and I got a chance to learn a little bit about animatronics and all that stuff. So basically, I think what I did is I went to school with the drive to be that type of artist, and kind of used the education I got there and went a different avenue, something that was a little atypical, I think.
So basically, to cover your bases, it was better to go on as a broad major than a centric major.
Just to
that's more employable.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, because I also thought about going to a fine art school, because I used to paint a lot of fine art, and I used to do a lot of drawing for art shows. So I almost did that, and I'm glad I didn't, because I can still be a fine artist without having credentials that say I'm a fine artist. I can, you know, still paint all I want. But I think that the degree I got propelled me a little more. So yeah, I think Face Off has given this form of art a lot more awareness, and it's cool to see a lot of upcoming people want to do it. And I like passing on knowledge, too, especially at the haunted house. A lot of actors here want to start learning a thing or two about this. A lot of them will, you know, every now and then will stay after work. They'll want to sculpt something. So it's cool. It's cool feeling like I'm part of a movement, you know.
You bring the beer, I'll stay after. Yeah.
That's the proposition, yes.
Some of the other stuff I think beer was involved in this. Hans Crippleton?
Oh, so much beer. In fact, I don't know if you got the chance to watch the movie, but it essentially is about a bunch of inbred hillbillies. They live on a zombie-infested wasteland. And
how many of these characters did you play?
In this particular one, I just played Hans.
Okay, because I was looking through your Facebook, and you were wearing the mother's fat suit.
Oh, yeah, I did.
Because of the beer.
I designed that for a good friend of mine, Irene Leonard. But I put it on to see what it felt like, and because I just kind of, I don't know, had a weird fantasy and wanted to work and I wanted to take pictures of myself.
We've seen the trailer for Hans Crippleton, yeah, and it's so special. It looks like a real fun show.
Well, thank you. It's kind of a parody. Well, here's another interesting thing, is that working at the haunted house, a lot of times you get a chance to kind of draft your own characters, and when you work the crowd and you get good feedback off a certain joke or a certain scare, it helps you develop it even more. Like, okay, they thought that was funny, so I'm going to catalog that line, use it again on other people. And so I came up with this character, Hans. I'm from Wyoming, so I wanted to be this kind of country bumpkin. And he wasn't, like, mutated at first. I started adding more abnormalities to him as the years went on. So I added a stunted hand, I added a hunchback and gnarly teeth, and just kind of kept developing it, and it became really successful. And when my friend and I decided to make a movie about this, I said, well, what if Hans is a character that has always been the haunted house scene? So what if the movie's done documentary style, where it's almost like a VH1 behind the scenes? So it takes a celebrity Hans, who's like a haunted house mascot, because that's kind of what it turned into, because I do a lot of traveling work with other haunted houses. So I've taken Hans to many states.
Taking that show on the road.
You know, that was the case. So we thought, you know, if we're going to chronicle the life of Hans, we have to have this family back home. And so we created all these bizarre characters and created this zombie subplot, because, you know, what makes Hans good at being a haunted house icon? Well, for one thing, he's deformed and scary to look at, and he's just kooky. But then if he grew up around zombies, he knows a thing or two about, you know, the haunt life, I guess. So yeah, we did that, and it was very fun. It's kind of there's a lot of inside humor for fellow haunters, but then another thing that it does is it makes a satire out of, well, reality television for one thing, and it also makes a satire out of those typical horror films. You get stranded on some back road and you meet this deranged family that scares the hell out of you and you want to leave, but our angle is like, well, what if you don't leave? What if you stay? And they're actually kind of fun. They're grotesque and bizarre in their own way, but they're actually funny to hang out with. And you mentioned beer. that was a subplot of the story. They're all very drunk and inebriated constantly. They run their own moonshine business, so they got.
But I'm sure a bunch of weren't drunk when you were doing all this, though.
Well, he had to, you know, he had to get into character.
But yeah, you've got to study the role.
Yeah.
Just yeah.
So that does bring the question that when you are working a haunted house, and it's like, and it's running, it's open, do you go out as Hans most of the time, or are you stuck in the back, you know, redoing makeup and making sure
it all looks
good? You
know what I always did throughout the years is I would do the makeup, I'd get all the actors ready, and then I would dress up as Hans, and I'd perform outside as a lot monster, because it's a lot more satisfying, because not every customer's fun, but when you have fun ones, those are the ones you want to interact with the longest. And also, so I mean, I guess it's kind of selfish on my part, because I have this like exhibitionist need to go out there and show off, I guess. So I would get to go out there, pick and choose my groups. But then also what made it feel good is like I'm giving people outside an experience, because when you go to an event and you're waiting in line, the line should be entertaining, because often you spend more of your time doing that than you actually do experiencing the show itself.
Yeah, that's right. True.
So you mentioned you like when a group's fun, so what makes a fun group at a haunted house? When they're scared or when they interact?
When they're scared, because a lot of times what I'll do is Hans, because Hans doesn't look like a monster. He just looks like a very unusual human. So when people see him, he's almost real enough that you don't know it's a character yet. And a lot of times what I'll do is, like, I'll just, like, walk up to someone and I'll just, like, kind of stand there and just wait for them to, like, turn around and see me. And they'll just, like, freak out. And it's usually, like, you have that one friend in a group that's a scaredy cat. So you kind of go after them. And then their friends always want to kind of, they want to throw coals on that fire. Like, yeah, that's funny. Come back. Come scare. And they just, you know, throw this friend under the bus, basically. And so I get to interact that way.
We
but
just
then
wanted to make sure we were doing
well,
it
right.
Well,
that's like, we were in a haunted house and We were in line, and all of a sudden we felt something by our feet, and I looked down, and there's this girl cowering, using us, and she's like begging us, like, don't move, because she was one
of
those scared
of
ones. Yeah, the scaredy cat.
I like to go for subtleties when I scare people, and then I find out what their scares kind of are. I just, you know, run with it. But you get people that are the non-scare type. And sometimes they just like to joke around. They just want to be entertained. And I love the groups. They kind of get me going. Because
some
Han's
people are just
more funny than scary. So.
Jonathan pointed at me whenever you said the non-scare types. And that's true. But some people are just desensitized. So, like, I probably see Hans and automatically assume this is a real person. If I do anything that is in any way scared, they're going to be insulted. And I won't do that. So I would treat you just like... you would literally have to tell me, you know, this is prosthetics, right? Yeah. if I hadn't seen it on YouTube.
I'll be honest with you. Lenny is the one who scared the characters at the haunted house. Like, literally.
That
will
happen.
There was this one dude. He had a big scary mask on. I don't remember. It was a demon.
I tried to give him a kiss.
And he was like, Mommy.
Yeah, I called
him
Mommy.
And the dude just kind of backed off.
Walked away
quietly.
Well,
I think one thing that's important is to, you know, go for your different types of people. Because if, as a character, if you're only scary and you don't have a wider range, you're not going to be able to engage the non-scare types.
Sure.
So since Hans has the ability to be scary, I can go after the scaredy cats. But since he's also has the ability to be funny, I can just entertain the people that are there to be entertained. Because when I go to a haunted house, I'm pretty jaded myself. So it's like, just show me cool stuff and show me good makeup.
And you do mention, I mean, the love to scare people and everything. So did you practice that growing up every Halloween? Or
I think I've always kind of been an antagonizer. I had a sister, and well, I still have a sister.
She's still
I hope
around.
So.
I had a sister.
She
for the moment
is terrified of spiders, right? Anyways, I wasn't the kindest brother growing up. I, you know, if I'd find a spider, I would definitely go after her with it. I remember one time I caught a gnarly one, big gnarly spider, and I had it in a coffee can. And I was chasing her with it, and it went on all day. I mean, I was having so much fun. I finally decided to let the spider loose, but I found a pebble. It was about the same size. So I put it into the coffee can, and when I saw my sister next, I, like, threw it on her. And her reaction was priceless. Like, she freaked out and, like, told me to go to hell and a lot of other colorful things. But I don't do that anymore because I think I've matured and have a little more respect. But I at least will I guess I still have that passion in me to kind of just, like, freak someone out. So I do it as a career now. It's like I went from scaring my sister with spiders to working in a haunted house as my occupation.
So do I think you and Lenny would get along if you met as Hans.
Okay, good.
So do you ever work inside the haunted house, like as a character inside, like where you have a permanent room and everything?
You know, it's been years. I've never been room assigned to the 13th floor, but at a former haunted house I worked at, Primitive Fear, once in a while I had a room assignment, but you know, to be honest, that hardly ever happened because my main status was always art department, makeup artist. So there were typically employees rounded up to just be the actors. So normally, if I acted, it was just kind of an extra for me, like if I wanted to stay and
you were standing in for somebody that may have been sick or something like that.
Well, and actually, I guess that brings up something I forgot to say, is that Hans was kind of conceived in a strange way, because it happened years ago. It was 2010 at a haunted house I was working for. I got all the actors ready, And it's early in the season. Everyone still has their enthusiasm. And I thought, you know, I want to act too. But the wardrobe was cleaned out completely because everyone else was wearing something. And that flannel and some overalls was the only thing left. So I put it on and I actually kind of just started, I guess, displaying my grandpa a little bit.
That's nice.
Because he's this gruff Wyoming guy, says funny, like, and he passed away, but one of the funny things about him is he had a temper. You get like angry and stuff, but some of the just older colloquial things he would say were just funny. So it's like he was hard to take seriously. So I just, you know, kind of fell into it in a very natural way because I had source material that I grew up with. So that's that's part of the way Hans was conceived. So it's a lot of fun for me, and I don't do Hans as often now because I feel like he's peaked now that he got a movie. What I'm on to next, though, and you've probably seen pictures, is a web series.
Yes.
It's in pre-production. We're a long ways out from delivering any episodes, but it's about Satan, yep. who is retired from hell. Yep. He doesn't want to – he's bored as hell. He's been doing it forever, and he doesn't want to do it anymore. So he walks out on hell, and he's just trying to – live a normal life on land, and he's old school, so he just doesn't understand a lot of things. And our actor is just hilarious. He is so funny. So my goal now post Face Off is to kind of keep that momentum going, and with this web series I want to fill it with a lot of production value, a lot of great makeups, great character designs, great set work. We're making a miniature hell right now for our long shots. And for a miniature, it's not so miniature. It's about 12 feet long. It's I'm not doing it at this shop. I'm doing it at another shop I work for down the street. So we got this big miniature hell. And I post pictures of that semi-frequently, so hopefully that'll be out soon. So anyways, right. Yeah, Bored as Hell. That's the next big thing for us.
Is that the name of it? Because
yeah,
if it is, that's very clever.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Well, and then my... Go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask, you mentioned that that's actually being done in a different studio, and you mentioned earlier you work for a different another company. So is it hard balancing both jobs? Is it hard balancing all the projects you have?
It gets hard. My hardest year ever was 2014 because I was working here at the 13th floor. I was working at LaFond Effects, and that's where we were taking on these extra clients where we often traveled. I traveled to Baltimore, I traveled to Georgia, Phoenix, some other places. So I was balancing that. Well, I also had another job at a graphic design company, and that's where I kind of employed my degree a little more. So I had three jobs on top of a lot of freelance work I was taking, on top of trying to make a feature film, because that was the year we were filming Hans Crippleton. Okay. So my plate was so full, and it was... it was a living hell, actually, trying to get through all that. And, you know, I never wanted to go through it again. But honestly, going through that year is what prepped me for Face Off, because once we got Hans Crippleton completed and we premiered it here in Denver at the Alamo Draft House, I got an email that day from Pittman Casting saying, hey, Face Off's renewed for another season. If you're interested in applying, please apply. And for years, I've been putting it off because I was always busy. And this time I thought, you know, I just finished this big thing that I was doing. The haunt season's almost done. Everything has slowed down. I thought, you know, this might be the time to do it. So I had 2 days on my hands to throw together an audition video. And I went for it and got on to season 9. I mentioned before I tried out for season 3, didn't get on, which I think is a great thing in a way, because the years in between, like I said, I took on a lot of work and a lot of responsibility and incurred a lot of hard deadlines to the point where I almost felt like I went through this boot camp training. And so once I was on Face Off and I was up against hard deadlines, it's like, deadlines, bring it on. I mean, I can do it now because
you've been through it already.
I put myself through a very tough year, and so I think when I was on Face Off, I did better for it. So I'm glad I didn't make it on to season 3. I think I performed a lot better having incubated for a little while than going on to season 9.
Now, with Michael Westmore, did he work with you a lot on the makeups, or did he just give you that small advice?
basically what you saw is what happened. He came in just day one to say, that looks good, or don't do that, or try this. Shake hands. You got a lot of work to do. Bye.
That was about it. You're going to be busy, so I'm going to go have a sandwich.
So besides the other contestants, did you have any time at all to get to know judges a little bit better, Michael better?
No. No, the judges, they were there and they were gone. I mean, they're...
Well, that's good. I'm glad he said that.
The judges are there as long as it takes...
To judge.
For them to judge, and they don't hang out, you know? Maybe in former seasons they did, but now that the show's been on a while, it's like, get me in, get me out. Right. I will say Mackenzie was very personable. I think she was cool, actually, because sometimes on our field trips, in between takes even, she would still hang out with us and just shoot the bull with us instead of, like, going off to her makeup trailer. She actually,
seems like she would be cool.
Well, she had a couple artists right there anyways. I'm sure one of you could have fixed her foundation.
Oh, God. Did you have anything else, Jonathan?
What is it like in the, like, when you guys are not in the,
lab and everything?
In the lab.
It's, what is that like? I mean...
Like, do you guys have a hotel room? Do you guys go to a house?
No, we stayed in a mansion. It was a cool place to stay. There's a big yard. There's a hot tub. Plenty of space. Like, games and stuff. The pantries are always filled with all the food we wanted.
Did they have
So it was really cool. So I think between lab days, like, we kind of just felt like we're real people again. And we hung out and... You know, we all got pretty close because you have no one else. I mean, right. That becomes mm-hmm. your support group. And so, like, you greet these people as competitors, but you say goodbye to them as friends at the end.
So did you have the freedom on when you weren't shooting, like, when you were just relaxing to go out and, like, grab something from a shop? Or were you mainly contained?
That's nope, great. It was house arrest. We did not go anywhere.
Awesome.
But that makes sense, too. So I'm glad he said that, too.
Well, yeah, it makes sense.
When you guys were eliminated, did you guys really go home, or did they fly you out again for the season finale? How did that work?
I did go home.
You did go home.
Yeah, I'd
leave too. I'd be pissed. I'd be like, screw this shit.
Well, here's the thing. Well, this is what kind of burns. It's like once you're eliminated, they're booking your flight right then and there. They don't
like bye.
There's no pat on the back.
You do your exit interview. You get back to the cast house. They have all your contraband in a bin. They throw your bin, like, there's your shit.
It's like getting out of prison.
Now. So it's like, you're seriously chopped liver once you're eliminated. And when I personally was eliminated and sent home, I didn't go back to work. I didn't want to. I decided to just drive up to Wyoming, have a little mini vacation because... I knew I was going to have to go back again to help with the finale, so...
Mm-hmm.
So do they fly you out again for that, or...
I'd assume.
How does that work? Okay, so they do fly you out.
You're just making sure you'll have a flight when you go back.
And I haven't watched Face Off for a very long time, so when they fly you out for that, I know on some other contest shows, you work with the finalists, or were you just an audience member?
I worked with the finalists. I was picked to help Evan. I worked on Evan's team.
Okay.
How did you feel about Nora winning the whole season?
I was very happy for her. I actually took a shine to her right away. What I think stands out about her is she's very supportive and very humble. She's just a good, level-headed person. So when she got that win, I was pretty happy for her. And, you know, I'll be honest, and hopefully if she ever hears this, she won't mind me saying so, but I didn't think of her as a threat at first because she had just graduated the Tom Savini school, which is where you specialize in effects makeup. Literally just graduated. She graduated the day before she was flying out on a plane to compete in Face Off. So
young.
I mean, she was so fresh to me. Yeah. But you know, it just goes to show you that you know passion can breed a winner. It's not always about experience.
Right.
Because there were people on that show that had decades of experience. There were people that just had a few years. Nora just had a few years and she won it. So I thought it was really cool. And, you know, I'll say it again, I was really happy for her. But also what I like about her being the winner is, like, I feel like it's a big inspiration to up-and-coming people. Because I think a lot of times we fear that we haven't been doing something long enough. So we'll never be a champion at it unless we make the investment to work at it for decades. But like the fact that Nora won, it shows you don't have to. Sometimes talent is just talent. Like a lot of times you have a natural inclination to be good at something. You just need a little bit of education or training to refine that innate ability you have. So I think it rings a powerful message to a lot of viewers, I think.
Well, that brings to ask, how hard is it a field to break into after you're done with your training? I mean, because not everybody gets to go on Face Off right out of...
You know, it's not easy. And, you know, when I decided to go to art school, I knew I wasn't walking into a wealthy life. I knew I was going to have to struggle.
That's
and I am, you know. Face Off doesn't... Face Off is not going to, like, carry me. It's... I still do have to struggle. I take a you pick and choose, because when you are trying, when you are green and you're trying to start out, you take a lot of free work or work that doesn't pay that well, and you really you just have to struggle, I guess. You have to make the investment to get the reputation, to get the notoriety and the recognition. And you know, location has a lot to do with it. I mean, Denver is not real big, but there is a pretty cool indie film community here, so there are chances to get work. And a lot of times with the indie scene, it's either low pay or no pay, and that's up to you as an artist to decide if you're beyond that or if you can still benefit from it. But then again, there's also other opportunities, like making a weed monster or something I couldn't do in other places. But in Denver, I get to do that, and he's going to dance around in public, and everyone's going to be okay with it. So, you know, that's fortunate.
So did you guys have, like, any goofballs like Robert on last season?
The funny man on our season, I would say, was Sydney. He was funny, and the house was less funny when he left, I'm afraid. But yeah, he cracked me up. I really liked him. And no one is weird as Robert. Like,
yeah,
I don't,
he was pretty weird.
I think artists often are eccentric, but no one no one was that weird.
Well, he named his rubber
also
dog,
an understatement.
He named his worm. I mean, every little thing that he did, he named. Mm-hmm. Which
I'm
was
like that
cool.
Too. I name everything.
I'm Googling.
He was entertaining to watch.
Names that are being dropped.
And I think a lot of times that's what they want to bring to the show, is not just an artist but a character themselves.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I've noticed that on, and I can't speak for the way the show's casted because I don't know. I mean, I was on one end of the experience. I'll never know what happens behind the scenes when it comes to certain processes, but what I have noticed from looking at other seasons is there's always quite an eclectic cast. Mm-hmm. You have people that are more conventional. You have people that are, you know, that stand out a lot more.
I think that's just a reality TV show formula. They have to have a varied enough cast, and it kind of just follows the original Real World.
Well, that's
why they go for one extremely crazy guy and some very obvious characters, and then some more crazy behind the scenes that you get to find out about their crazy later.
Yeah, and I think another reason why they do that is because, especially when a reality show is early on in the season, you're not going to memorize names. So you need, like, easy descriptions. So you might say, you know, there's always someone with funky colored hair.
Yeah,
you might
say
the one with the orange
hair. That's the one I always,
they might say the goth one, or might... I was messy hair guy for a while. I got
that
to stick around
me
long enough that I, like, by episode 5, I finally got a name. Like when I'd read comments,
I don't,
like,
have any hair anymore, but
I was referred to by my name at last. But I think that could be another reason why.
So if they did ask you to come back, like, for an All-Star season, would you? Or are you satisfied? Okay.
You want to put yourself through that torture again?
I would, and I think I'd be more prepared, and I think I'd be a lot more okay with the results, because, you know, the first time around, you feel like you really have something to prove. I think a second time around, you feel like a redemption, but I think in a way you've already, I guess I can't speak for everyone, but, like, for me personally, I feel like I've already, like, showcased myself. Now I just want to bring it even further. And yes, I would be, I don't know, I kind of,
I
would
win
be it, willing to be masochistic enough to go through it again.
I think you would win it if you went through it again. I think you should have won last season, but that's just my opinion.
Do they have audience vote, or it's the judges vote, right?
They had one season that it was an audience vote who won.
Yeah, who won season that. Three. Yeah.
Okay, because I couldn't remember.
Well, the aspect with face-off, and the contestants sometimes mention it within the show, the judges also mention it a lot, but when you're doing that, everybody has their highs and lows, and if you just happen to hit a low at the wrong time,
yeah,
you know, it's not necessarily a reflection of everything you've done, it's just it didn't work that
you had
time.
A bad
well, and it's a contest. Well, everybody can have a bad week and just lose because they could have been the number one contender and have a bad week and then be out of the contest and going home. That
yeah,
week,
that's
whenever
the unfortunate
any other
thing.
Week they could have won.
That yeah, that is unfortunate because no matter what type of craft you do, there's bad work in all of us. So
amen,
you know, if
that,
it happens
brother.
To land on a week where you just didn't perform that well, yeah, it could be the nail in the coffin.
And with you, I mean, you went through 9 episodes, and it's the further along you get, the more nitpicky it becomes because everybody's stepping up their game. So it's
yeah,
really,
everyone
it's
is, and the probability just gets higher. I mean, when you're in a mix of 16, your survival odds are a lot greater. But when it thins down, you know, then that's when you're in trouble.
That's the same thing whenever you're in an actual zombie apocalypse, as I've heard.
Basically,
thins.
If you're in, well, it is. It's the same principle because, like, if you're in a zombie apocalypse, you really just got to outperform your friends. I mean,
constantly, it's constantly face off.
Yeah,
literally,
you don't have to.
It
yeah,
never
you
stops
you
being face off.
Zombies.
Yeah, you don't have
you know,
to be MacGyver. You just. Yeah.
I just have one little. You don't have to answer this, but what were you doing in Georgia working?
I was working. There's another haunted house I was working for in Georgia. It's called Haunted Montrose. We were out there helping them with a few of their room designs.
I have a few friends out there, and there's a lot of events, particularly that deal with zombies and stuff like that.
I can imagine.
But there's also So I was just kind of curious because I've spent a little time in the Atlanta area, and
I really liked it. I liked this experience out there, and they also have a lot of film work there.
That's
kind of makes me wish I.
It is, yeah.
I wish
maybe
Georgia
even more than Denver in a lot of ways.
Well, and that's with where you're at now. Do you see yourself traveling for more projects or maybe different jobs, or are you pretty much wanting to stay
Absolutely.
In Denver now? Okay.
I mean, Denver's my home base. That's where I want to stay. But mm-hmm. I would always be willing to travel for work and.
Right, it's for work. So.
It's always been something I've personally wanted to do, also. And in the recent years, I've gotten that opportunity more
to
see new places and just experience.
So you're traveling places. For work, but you're out there looking for work where you can travel for work and make money so you can see your stuff and actually work.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I'm not ready to move. I know a lot of people in my field head out to L.A., My fear is that it's very saturated, and I do believe I can find work there, but I think I would still be kind of low man on the totem if I went out there. I mean, I could probably find work in an effects shop, but it might be something, I don't know, making eyes all day or casting body parts all day. Mm-hmm. It's something like.
I hear it's very soul killing.
Yeah.
So if you need to kill your old soul, then just head on out there. I think Denver's a good place to be right now. It's definitely on the way up in the world.
Yep.
It's making a lot of waves, a lot of attention,
yeah,
a lot of money.
This is definitely where I plan on staying.
Well, I know you said you needed to have other things to do tonight, so I don't want to take too much more of your time, so our hour's about up with you. So I do appreciate you visiting with us, Kevin.
Yeah, I'm glad we did this, and I hope I covered everything that was on your mind.
If you're willing to, maybe later on we can have you back on, if nothing else, just to BS with you, just talk about what's happening.
Or if you have any special projects you want to promote.
Yeah, you know, I would like that. The big one I want to promote right now is Bored as Hell.
That sounds awesome.
That's really what I'm focused on.
I've been paying attention to your Facebook page.
So
okay,
how,
cool.
can you
Thank
give
you.
Us any idea
Which,
of how
by the
soon
way,
we're going
to
be able to
accept
see?
My friend request.
Oh, my gosh. Wow, that was creepy.
Will you do me a favor and message me?
Message you?
He probably gets a lot of them, Jonathan.
Will you do me a favor and message me and say, hey, you. Hey, you, accept my request. Because, yes, I will.
It came off. I'm not saying you're a creeper. It just came off as creepy. That's
all right.
It
I have a good meaning friend. that if he has met you for like 3 minutes minimum and he gets your full name out of the conversation, he will friend you on Facebook. And then he'll try to get your Snapchat. Not because he's weird. He's such a friendly guy that he instantly is like, well, yeah. Like,
the reason why is because I want to actually try to help Kevin promote some of his stuff. Yeah.
Well, but anyway, real quick before he has to go, do you have any idea of how soon we're going to see some glimpses of Bored as Hell? You said it's a webisode series, right?
Yeah, and it's going to be short, just sketch comedy style, kind of Saturday Night Live. It'll all be on YouTube. I'm hoping this fall, because we'll probably spend our summer on production. It's just that there's so many pre-production things that have to happen, mainly set building, and then we have to create a lot of our characters also. So we're in the thick of that right now. There's just so much we have to do. I can't promise that it's going to be
this
soon.
Fall. Yeah.
But this year, I hope.
Yeah. Well, we'll look forward to that, and we'll definitely make sure Jonathan lets us know when you...
Okay.
I'm sure Jonathan will have his finger on the pulse.
I would love to do this again, because I could talk more about the progression of that as well.
For sure. We'd love to do it anytime.
And we'll definitely put a link to the Heart and Fire Film Productions on the webpage. That way they can click over to your YouTube channel.
Cool, yeah. And real quick, I'll just say I'm not... I didn't found that. My friend Jimmy Lee Combs did, and he's working on a project called Terror Tales right now, which is an anthology, a horror anthology, and my effects will be featured in that as well. So
nice. I saw the teaser trailer.
Terror Tales. You'll see my work there also.
Terror Tales. That sounds
great. That looks
a
little bit more intense.
Yeah, that is. That's more traditional horror.
But is Heartfire, is that the studio that's doing...
I thought you just said traditional horror.
Traditional horrors are so much harder to get it these days.
I know, right?
They are. This is the studio that's doing the Bored as Hell project.
That's right. Yep.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so I'll know who to follow on that note.
Do you have any social networking that you have available for people to follow you on, Kevin, that you want to mention?
Honestly, we covered it, and Face Off's the big one. That's mostly where I post.
Okay. Well, I want to thank everybody for listening. Kevin, definitely.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Kevin Ward, he was on episode 9 of Face Off. He was also
season 9. Me. He didn't just show up and then,
he was on until episode 9 for sure. But it was season 9.
Okay, give me some grief here, guys. We've been visiting with Kevin Ward. He was the contestant on Face Off on season 9. He's also involved with Heart and Fire Film Productions. Projects he's been working on is Hans Crippleton, Conflicted, and his upcoming that he wants everybody to make sure to pay attention to is Bored as Hell. So everybody go to YouTube and look up Bored as Hell, and we'll have a link on the page as well. But Kevin, thank you so much for joining
us.
Tonight.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Everybody out there, we've been having fun. We hope everybody's been having fun listening. We will catch you on the next time.
Bye. Bye.
Goodbye.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any publisher, distributor, or studio, and it is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show hosts are their own and are not reflective in any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.